Hi, and welcome to the Making the Media podcast with me, Craig Wilson. Great to have you with us for another episode in Season 3. CNN is probably one of the best known and most high profile news organizations in the world. So I'm really delighted that our guest for this episode is CNN International's Director of Technical Operations, Rebecca Moore, who is based at the network's London Bureau. A long-time CNN staffer, she's been there for more than 25 years, she looks after the day-to-day leadership of the studios in both London and Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, managing the control room, studios, lighting and makeup teams. As we all know, news never stops, especially so when you're on air 24/7, 365 days a year, and in the case of CNN International, you're also working closely with other teams all across the globe, particularly with their headquarters operation in Atlanta in the United States and their other major hub in Hong Kong. Rebecca comes from a technical production background, but we'll let her explain that as she outlines her career path, which led her to CNN.
I've always wanted to work in the news. Ever since I was a child, you know, watching John Craven's Newsround and Press Gang, I've absolutely always wanted to work in the news. So everything I could possibly do throughout uni and afterwards was always to try and get a job in the news, be it local newspapers or independent video production companies, until I finally got a job in London after I'd graduated, creating infomercials for Euronews. And I was there, I was like a PA, you know, ordering tape stock, booking studios, all that sort of stuff. From there, I got a job at Live TV, owned by the Mirror Group, which was a great learning curve. You know, I went from MCR to transmission, doing everything from Dog Night Live, outside broadcasts, to transmitting all night long, overnight programming, to finally getting to Westminster Live, where I directed the 2-minute top of the hour bulletins and the lunchtime news, which was fantastic. We got to do absolutely everything, rolling the videos, tracking the audio, directing the talent. You really were a one-person band there, getting everything done to get that job on air. Finally, I thought it's time to go and work for a proper news broadcaster. And I applied it to CNN. And the minute I got into the interview, the wonderful chap who interviewed me looked at my CV, really questioned that we had done everything that we were done as one person in the Westminster Live gallery, as it was right there called then. We call them control rooms at CNN. And within a couple of weeks, I was working here.
And what kind of role did you move into when you joined CNN? And then how's your career progressed until you get to this point?
Well, I started as a director on the early morning shift, which was, we started around 4 a.m. and we directed 4 hours of early morning news shows. And again, it was very much a multi-skilled role. We directed and vision mixed and ran our own cameras. And from there, we would also rotate around the control room. So I'd do the vision mixing, I'd do the cameras, and then I'd do audio and some floor managing as well. And as time progressed, I sort of took on different roles and different responsibilities, and I became a supervisor and a senior and a manager. And then finally, as we, just before the pandemic hit, as we were starting to move into our Old Street Bureau, I got promoted to Director of Technical Operations.
How important do you think it is that you've had that background of working across lots of different parts of the organization? How does that inform really what you do today?
It's incredibly important. I think that I now manage the operators. I manage the teams that do the job that I used to do. And as an operator, I can understand what their needs are, what they require to get the job done to the best of their abilities, the pressures they're under in live television. I also manage the Abu Dhabi technical teams as well, for the control room there. And being able to just sort of put yourself in their shoes makes you a better manager, to my mind. But also looking at, if something needs doing, I've been here now such a long time, I've been here 25 years. If I don't know how to get something done or how to get something changed or what to purchase or what where to go with a, an issue or a challenge, I probably know somebody who does. And I've worked my way up with lots of other people here at CNN. So, you know, my career has progressed at the same pace as some other people. So they know the same as me. So I know the director of technical operations in Atlanta and the same person who does the same job as me in Hong Kong. So we can share a lot of those experiences.
So that was the question I was going to ask about. Obviously, CNN is a large global organization. You know, how do you coordinate things, you know, between, you know, the CNN family, if you like, to make sure everyone's on the same page?
Well, we never stop communicating. If it's, you know, Slack, WhatsApp, RTS comms, meetings, we all know each other so very, very well. We're chatting outside of the workday as well. We're 24/7, right? So you can't really just say I'm only working 9 to 5. We're constantly talking. There are 3 or 4 news gathering editorial meetings a day. I have regular weekly meetings with my counterparts in Atlanta and Hong Kong. And oftentimes, if we're implementing a new piece of equipment, we're implementing it across all bureaus. So we're all part of that project team. Launching the Old Street Bureau involved a massive collaboration because the shows here go to Atlanta for transmission, so Atlanta needs to be involved. We also needed extra help, right? We had to stay on air from another bureau and get ready to be on air from a new bureau. So we ended up having engineers fly in from Abu Dhabi, Hong Kong. The project manager was Atlanta-based. We have New York teams flying in to help us out. We never stop communicating.
And I guess as well, that's always the challenge, isn't it, with 24 news, is it doesn't stop. You know, it's not like you can switch off one week and, you know, we can come back on air once everything is kind of sorted. You mentioned about Abu Dhabi there, and I know that the Abu Dhabi Bureau there has just had a recent kind of move as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what was involved in that and then what your role was of overseeing that.
Yeah, it's a very small bureau, Abu Dhabi. So I was a lot more involved in things maybe outside of my usual remit, if you will. So even from things like helping to design the studio, as well as the control room. Lessons learned from the control room here in Old Street, how to make it ergonomic for the operators, we passed on to the Abu Dhabi teams. I was also partly helped design reception. So it was a really hands-on. It's really hard to say it's in, and you don't just have one job. You know, in fact, I've often said if you're only doing one job, you're probably not working hard enough. There's always something else to do, and that's what's fantastic about CNN. You can try and do lots of different things that aren't necessarily in your remit. So working closely with the engineers. Because obviously engineers have a way that they like to do things, that then operators have a way that they want to do it, and then collaborating with that. It was all hands on deck, and it was slightly different to the Old Street move where I really did just focus on the control room. Abu Dhabi was a little bit of everything.
So you mentioned there that Abu Dhabi is, you know, a relatively small bureau, but it does play an important part in the wider CNN, you know, output. There's a lot of output comes out from there as well. So how was that coordinated with that wider team as well?
Yeah, there was a lot. So Becky Anderson's Connect the World is 2 hours, and it's prime time. So it's 2 hours of prime time programming. So there was a lot of communication around, is there an opportunity for the show to go on the road? How do we maintain Becky's calendar so that she can rehearse a show, anchor a show, and she's also the managing editor of the bureau in the region as well, and she has that role as well. So there's a lot of coordination, but she also works so hard. But yeah, we did take opportunities of various outside broadcast news events in that region that we could anchor the show from there and then get her to come back to the bureau and rehearse. And we also set up a studio in her home. So very similar to what we had been doing in the pandemic, where we set up a studio in Becky's home so she could broadcast from there via LiveView to Atlanta. And we just implemented that as we went in to trying to make sure that we could hybrid work the whole thing to do a launch.
Yeah, so you mentioned the pandemic there, and of course, for a lot of people, you know, that was when, you know, remote working, hybrid working, you know, became very, very prevalent. But for an organization like CNN, I'm guessing remote working is kind of what you people do a lot of the time, because you've got correspondents in lots of different places. How easy or difficult is it to kind of take those learnings from what happened through the pandemic and then apply them to the organization? Is it something you're still kind of working through, how things were done, or has it opened up new ways of working, I guess?
I think it depends what department you work in. As my teams are based in a control room, a gallery, it's hard for you to build a control room or a gallery in someone's home, right? No one's got the space. So my team actually, as we moved into Old Street, we launched 5 out of 6 shows before the pandemic hit. Then the pandemic hit and we went dark, which was a real shame. So the crew all went home. We'd strive to do the best we possibly could as the pandemic was hitting. And I'm really proud of what we did, actually, the fact that we managed to get those shows on air. But at the end of the day, you know, it was the pandemic. There was nothing we could do. Everyone got sent home. So we ended up doing some sort of hybrid working from home, again, broadcasting from an anchor's home. The shots could be seen at a desk of one of my team in their home, and they could VPN in to various sort of images, quality control, do some work with the Atlanta team to help coordinate between the Atlanta control room and the camera operator that was in the anchor's home. But it was hard. And as soon as we could, we all got back in again. So hybrid working hasn't worked for the London team. The Abu Dhabi team, who also edit as well as shoot as well as work in the control room, they were all editing from home at this time, so they could edit and do that from home. So hybrid working for my team almost doesn't exist anymore. We're back in the control room. We have to be in the control room, you know, 24/7. Somebody from technical operations is in a control room 24/7. There's not much we can do hybrid for now, but there is, you know, I do a lot of DE&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and I do think that hybrid working can offer us some opportunities in the DE&I world. For instance, you know, if you are differently abled and you can't travel in somewhere, potentially how can hybrid working help that? How can hybrid working help for people who don't live in London when we are broadcasting from London? So it is there. It is around for various departments right now. It's not there, to my mind, for my technical teams.
So when you're looking now at the sort of technical solution that you'd look to, you know, implement for anywhere, is the cloud part of your thinking for the kind of work that you're doing these days, or is it much more about physical kit that's in locations?
Well, it's the cloud isn't really my remit, but I'm obviously aware of it's out there and the opportunities that it can offer. And I do, in my mind, again, do think it can offer various things for DE&I, but I also think it can offer us opportunities around our sort of budgetary restraints. Is there a way for technical operations, London, Atlanta, Abu Dhabi, to share equipment servers that are based in the cloud? Is there a way for us to only need to purchase one piece of kit and we can all use it just at various different times? It's there. I think coming out of the pandemic, we are thinking more about the cloud and what options it can give us. But right now it's, you know, the London control room was built before we were really investigating the cloud. So right now it's not really in my remit.
Going back to what you said at the very start and then what you said there, Rebecca, it sounds like efficiency of use of equipment and efficiency of use of people would be kind of central to how you address things in the future. Is that a fair statement to say?
It is a fair statement to say. I think we are all incredibly aware of the budgetary restraints around broadcasting the news. It's an incredible and expensive offering to give people to watch. It's the travel, it's the time, it's the equipment. It is incredibly expensive to produce. So anything we can do to be more fiscally responsible around that. I mean, let's be honest, not a lot of people want to pay for it either. People would like their news for free. So we have to pay a lot of attention to our budgets, and anything we can do that is streamlined, efficient, still keeps the production values high, still means that we can deliver on deadlines, we should be looking at.
So you've talked about the two moves effectively you've done, the one in London and the one in Abu Dhabi. How important has it been that staff have been flexible through that period as well? Because I'm guessing that having staff who are flexible and willing and adapt, I mean, you know, I've worked in news for a long time as well. That's one of the key things I always think about it, is that you have to have people who are adaptable, can deal with things as they come along, and can continue to function at a higher level and produce. So what's your view of how staff have coped with everything for the last few years?
I mean, do you know what? I think, and I know people have been using the word resilient over and over and over again, and I think we've all worked out we've got new levels of the resilience that we didn't even know that we had. I am so proud of my teams who have worked and found new ways to work and then have offered new ways to work around the pandemic and around launches and why don't we try this and look at this new piece of equipment and can we partner on this? It's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, I make it a if I'm interviewing for a position, I make sure that everybody I hire is cleverer than me. I'm not the smartest in the room. I'm not the most technical in the room, but my team are absolutely phenomenal. It's like working with a bunch of geniuses. I mean, the lighting director who worked on the Abu Dhabi move and the London move, his equipment, he can remotely access lighting in London and Abu Dhabi from his home. So he set that up during lockdown, and we will consistently keep doing that now, because if he's got, you know, the way, if he wants to take his child to school, then he can do the lighting around that. That's fantastic. And that's hybrid working to the next level. But the teams are so agile, and across every piece of new equipment, where I wish I had the time to be able to do all these things, but because they're just, I mean, like I said, I also manage hair and makeup, MCR, the control room team in London and in Abu Dhabi, and they're all keeping on top of the equipment and the new ideas in their areas far more than I wish, well, I do wish I could, but far more than I ever can.
Do you think it's changed as well your own view of what's capable because of what's happened over the course of the last couple of years? Because I think it's, you know, you talked about moving into a relatively new position back in, was 2019, I think you said, when that was. And I'm sure as you came into that, you had a view and ideas of how things would be. And then, of course, everything changed because of the pandemic. So do you think it's had an influence on your own view of how things can be done?
Well, it has and it hasn't, because I think my number one priority as the director of technical operations is looking after my teams. And that was most important during the pandemic. It is now and was back then my number one priority to ensure that everyone was okay. And I was a really wise engineer said to me as we were coming to the end of the Old Street move, just look after yourself, because project, you can suddenly have a massive dip, and you just, you know, this Old Street move was huge for me personally, and did result in me getting a promotion at the end of it. But you have to look after your own mental health once all you've done is focus on a project solidly, 110%, for a couple of years. And then when it's launched, you sort of feel like, well, what am I going to do to fill my time? What happened is that we then hit a pandemic and the challenges were different. I had new things to look at, and I had to fundamentally ensure that my team, who are usually a lot younger than me, and some of them were living on their own, I really had to make sure they were okay. You know, they didn't have a bubble to be part of. They were on their own, only allowed out of the house 1 hour a day. And they just launched major shows, prime time programming, and then they were suddenly shut down at home.
Yes, that was such a difficult period for everyone. Moving on to another subject now, Rebecca, how do you learn about, you know, new things and new innovations? Are you relying on your staff for a lot of that these days?
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously, there's the conferences, but that's not really, I go and look around the conferences and I end up just chatting to the folks that we already have, you know, vendor relationships with. It is the teams. It is the engineers. It is the control room directors. It is the camera operators all saying, hey, we found this new piece of kit. Come and have a look at it. And that's how it's always the stuff that works is brought to you by the people who need something to do a particular job that they've realized will be made easier if something else exists. So it's always the team. They've always seen something on you know, on YouTube or on one of the vendor sites or something that a friend from another network has told them about. The team are pivotal in giving me ideas. I've got a senior guy who's an absolute genius, and he'll see something, see how it works, and then sort of pull it to bits and go, actually, you know, it can do this as well. And that's the sort of, you know, CNN's got a lot of these people, but I'm lucky to have one on my team. And he really does push me to look at these new pieces of kit, but also how you can use an older piece of kit somewhat differently.
And do you think as well, I mean, I think from what you said, Rebecca, it sounds like there is a culture that's fostered to encourage that. Do you see that as part of your role?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really important to open up yourself to new ideas. I've started to feel like I feel like part of the institution. I'm an old lady here at CNN now, so I have to listen to what other people, the other people are telling me from other departments. Or can we try this? You know, can we try this camera? Shall we look at this way of vision mixing? Is there a different way to do this live view? All these different ideas are brought to you by people who were editing on their phones, who were, you know, are constantly, I've got the live view up on my phone, I can do this, I can edit, I can do graphics on my phone. I can't do graphics on my phone. I have no idea how to do graphics on my phone. But these are people coming in who have come in potentially as interns or junior members of staff, and who have got a completely new way of working because they do everything on a phone.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting point about how learning, I think, goes up as well as can come down as well. You know, I think that those kind of things, and it's the best way to learn from, it's a phrase I don't particularly like, which is digital natives, but I think there's a lot that people can learn from younger people coming into an organization.
Absolutely, who don't feel the restraints of, well, I should be at my laptop. No, it's all on your phone. Why I should be at my desk. Well, it's on your phone. It doesn't matter. It's all on your phone.
You mentioned earlier on about the work that you've done within the sort of DE&I space. Just from a personal perspective, how important is that kind of work to you?
It's huge. It fills my cup. It makes me happy. It's the sort of thing that I left home. We were so lucky to have so much support from our DE&I counterparts around the CNN universe. We hosted a group of students on Thursday for International Women's Day, sixth form students, 20 young students who are studying film and media studies at a local school, and we got to host them for the day. They had an hour with camera operators, editors, producers, the control room, the anchors, the correspondents, and the feedback we got was absolutely fantastic. These are students who honestly didn't think that working in broadcasting was something that they could ever do. They didn't even realize CNN had a bureau here. You know, they didn't even realize that these were the opportunities that young women can have these days. And they just had the most amazing time. The emails I've had this week, just saying what a great time they had, really means that what we are doing is so incredibly important. Around sort of the socioeconomic parts of DE&I, not just what everybody thinks about sort of race and colour and religion and men and women. It's so much broader than that. So it's the DE&I is incredibly important to me.
Do you think as well, I mean, this is something I've spoken to a few people about, and one thing that strikes me about it is the more diverse the organization is, actually the better stories that can be produced, different types of stories that can be produced. Actually, you know, this isn't something that should be seen as a box-ticking exercise. This is actually something that can fundamentally change the way that programming's made and the types of programs that are made for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got to think about when we do send our journalists into the field, they are much more likely to get better stories and better feedback from people in the field if they share a culture or a language or they look the same or that sort of thing. So you've got to think about, we broaden our viewpoint in the newsroom, but then we also broaden the voices that will talk to us as well. And that's incredibly important.
Rebecca, really, really interesting to chat to you and to get your perspective. Now, there is one question I ask everyone on the podcast, so I'm going to ask you, which is, what is it, if anything, that keeps you up at night?
Gosh, I'm going to need a minute. I think part of my D&I is around making sure that we do offer, that it isn't a box-ticking exercise, that we do have something tangible to show for the changes that we want to make, that we want to open up the newsrooms, that we want to bring in these different voices. I mean, I was really disappointed this weekend when I read that the government have postponed the launch of the new T-levels around media and broadcasting. So they've been put off for another year. We were partnering with people at Warner Brothers Discovery to see what we could do around their apprenticeships, around their work experience and things like that. We know we're heading for a skill shortage. We know our engineers and our technicians are at an age now, and we're going back to age again, we're at an age now where they may be heading to retirement. We're going to have a skill shortage. And I do think that that is something that does worry me. I don't want this to be an empty exercise. I want to have something to show that we have made a difference.
Lots of food for thought there from Rebecca. And of course, the skills crisis facing the industry is something we've touched on here before on the podcast. So check out the show notes for links to an earlier episode where we discussed just that. Thanks to Rebecca for joining us. And I think that is a subject we will revisit soon. Also in the show notes is a link to an article where news leaders from ITV in the UK and Vice News in the USA discuss their strategies. What do you think about what we talked about? Get in touch. You can email us. We are makingthemedia@avid.com, or you can get in touch via any of the Avid social accounts or to me directly. I am Craig AW1969 on both Twitter and Instagram. Now, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to get notified when new episodes are out. And please like, share and leave a review to spread the word about what we're doing. That's all for this edition. Thanks to Rebecca. Thanks to our producer, Matt Diggs. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. My name is Craig Wilson. Join me next time for more in-depth discussion with the people making the media.